to revert to Mr. Bloom, who, after his first entry, had been conscious of some impudent mocks, which he, however, had borne with as being the fruits of that age upon which it is commonly charged that it knows not pity. The young sparks, it is true, were as full of extravagances as overgrown children. The words of their tumultuary discussions were difficultly understood, and not often nice. Their testiness and outrageous mow was such that his intellects resiled from. Nor were they scrupulously sensible of the proprieties, though their fund of strong animal spirits spoke in their behalf. But the word of Mr. Costello was an unwelcome language for him, for he nauseated the wretch that seemed to him a crop-eared creature of a misshapen gibbosity, born out of wedlock and thrust like a crookback, toothed and feet-first into the world, which the dint of the surgeon's pliers in his skull lent indeed a colour to, so as to put him in thought of that missing link of creation's chain desiderated by the late ingenious Mr. Darwin. It was now, for more than the middle span of our allotted years, that he had passed through the thousand vicissitudes of existence, and, being of a wary ascendancy, and self a man of rare forecast, he had enjoined his heart to repress all motions of a rising choler, and, by intercepting them with the readiest precaution, foster within his breast that plenitude of sufferance which base minds jeer at, rash judges scorn, and all find tolerable and but tolerable. To those who create themselves wits at the cost of feminine delicacy, a habit of mind which he never did hold with, to them he would concede neither to bear the name nor to herit the tradition of a proper breeding. While for such that, having lost all forbearance, can lose no more, there remained the sharp antidote of experience to cause their insolency to beat a precipitate and inglorious retreat. Not but what he could feel with mettlesome youth, which, caring naught for the mouths of dotards or the gruntlings of the severe, is ever, as the chaste fancy of the holy writer expresses it, for eating of the tree, forbid it yet not so far forth as to pretermit humanity upon any condition soever towards a gentlewoman when she was about her lawful occasions. To conclude, while from the sister's words he had reckoned upon a speedy delivery, he was, however, it must be owned, not a little alleviated by the intelligence that the issue so auspicated after an ordeal of such duress now testified once more to the mercy as well as to the bounty of the Supreme Being. Accordingly, he broke his mind to his neighbour, saying that, to express his notion of the thing, his opinion, who ought not perchance to express one, was that one must have a cold constitution and a frigid genius not to be rejoiced by this freshest news of the fruition of her confinement, since she had been in such pain through no fault of hers. The dressy young blade said it was her husband's that put her in that expectation, or at least it ought to be, unless she were another Ephesian matron. "I must acquaint you," said Mr. Crothers, clapping on the table so as to evoke a resonant comment of emphasis. "Old Glory Allelujerum was round again today, an elderly man with Dundreary's, preferring, through his nose, a request to have word of Wilhelmina, my life, as he calls her. I bade him hold himself in readiness for that the event would burst anon. Slife, I'll be round with you. I cannot but extol the virile potency of the old bucko that could still knock another child out of her. All fell to praising of it, each after his own fashion, though the same young blade held with his former view that another than her conjugial had been the man in the gap, a clerk in orders, a link boy, virtuous, or an itinerant vendor of articles needed in every household. Singular, communed the guest with himself, the wonderfully unequal faculty of metempsychosis possessed by them, that the puerperal dormitory and the dissecting theatre should be the seminaries of such frivolity, that the mere acquisition of academic titles should suffice to transform in a pinch of time these votaries of levity into exemplary practitioners of an art which most men anywise eminent have esteemed the noblest. But, he further added, it is, mayhap, to relieve the pent-up feelings that in common oppress them, for I have more than once observed that birds of a feather laugh together. But with what fitness, let it be asked of the noble lord, his patron, has this alien, whom the concession of a gracious prince has admitted to civic rights, constituted himself the lord paramount of our internal polity? Where is now that gratitude which loyalty should have cancelled? During the recent war, whenever the enemy had a temporary advantage with his Granados, did this traitor to his kind not seize that moment to discharge his piece against the empire of which he is a tenant at will, while he trembled for the security of his 4%? Has he forgotten this, as he forgets all benefits received? Or is it that from being a deluder of others he has become at last his own dupe, as he is, if report belie him not, his own and his only enjoyer? Far be it from candour to violate the bedchamber of a respectable lady, the daughter of a gallant major, or to cast the most distant reflections upon her virtue, but if he challenges attention there, as it was indeed highly his interest not to have done, then be it so. Unhappy woman, she has been too long and too persistently denied her legitimate prerogative to listen to his objurgations with any other feeling than the derision of the desperate. He says this, a censor of morals, a very pelican in his piety, who did not scruple, oblivious of the ties of nature, to attempt illicit intercourse with a female domestic drawn from the lower strata of society. Nay, had the hussy's scouring brush not been her tutelary angel, it had gone with her as hard as with Hagar the Egyptian. In the question of the grazing lands, his peevish asperity is notorious, and in Mr. Cuff's hearing brought upon him from an indignant rancher a scathing retort couched in terms as straightforward as they were bucolic. It ill becomes him to preach that gospel. Has he not, nearer home, a seed-field that lies fallow for the want of the ploughshare? A habit reprehensible at puberty is second nature, and an opprobrium in middle life. If he must dispense his balm of Gilead in nostrums and apothems of dubious taste to restore to health a generation of unfledged profligates, let his practice consist better with the doctrines that now engross him. His marital breast is the repository of secrets which decorum is reluctant to adduce. The lewd suggestions of some faded beauty may console him for a consort neglected and debauched, but this new exponent of morals and healer of ills is at his best an exotic tree, which, when rooted in its native Orient, throve and flourished, and was abundant in balm. But transplanted to a clime more temperate, its roots have lost their quondam vigour. while the stuff that comes away from it is stagnant, acid, and inoperative. The news was imparted with a circumspection recalling the ceremonial usage of the sublime port by the second female infirmarian to the junior medical officer in residence, who in his turn announced to the delegation that an heir had been born. When he had betaken himself to the women's apartment to assist at the prescribed ceremony of the afterbirth, in the presence of the Secretary of State for Domestic Affairs and the members of the Privy Council, silent in unanimous exhaustion and approbation, the delegates, chaffing under the length and solemnity of their vigil, and hoping that the joyful occurrence would palliate a license which the simultaneous absence of Abigail and obstetrician rendered the easier, broke out at once into a strife of tongues. In vain the voice of Mr. Canvasser Bloom was heard endeavouring to urge, to mollify, to refrain. The moment was too propitious for the display of that discursiveness which seemed the only bond of union among tempers so divergent. Every phase of the situation was successively eviscerated. The prenatal repugnance of uterine brothers, the caesarean section, posthumity with respect to the father, and, that rarer form, with respect to the mother, the fratricidal case known as the child's murder, and rendered memorable by the impassioned plea of Mr. Advocate Bush, which secured the acquittal of the wrongfully accused, the rights of primogeniture, and King's bounty touching twins and triplets, miscarriages and infanticides, simulated or dissimulated, the acardiac fetus in fetu, and aprosopia due to a congestion, the agnathia of certain chinless Chinamen, cited by Mr. Candidate Mulligan, in consequence of defective reunion of the maxillary knobs along the medial line, so that, as he said, one ear could hear what the other spoke, the benefits of anaesthesia or twilight sleep, the prolongation of labour pains in advance gravidancy by reason of pressure on the vein, the premature relentment of the amniotic fluid, as exemplified in the actual case, with consequent peril of sepsis to the matrix, artificial insemination by means of syringes, involution of the womb consequent upon the menopause, the problem of the perpetration of the species in the case of females impregnated by delinquent rape, that distressing manner of delivery called by the Brandenburgers Sturzgeburt, the recorded instances of multiseminal, twi-kindled, and monstrous births conceived during the catamenic period of consanguineous parents. In a word, all the cases of human nativity which Aristotle has classified in his masterpiece, with chromolithographic illustrations. The gravest problems of obstetrics and forensic medicine were examined with as much animation as the most popular beliefs on the state of pregnancy, such as the forbidding to a gravid woman to step over a country stile, lest, by her movement, the navel cord should strangle her creature, and the injunction upon her in the event of a yearning, ardently and ineffectually entertained, to place her hand against that part of her person which long usage has consecrated as the seat of castigation. The abnormalities of hare lip, breast mole, supernumerary digits, negro's inkle, strawberry mark, and port wine stain were alleged by one as a prima facie and natural hypothetical explanation of those swine-headed, the case of Madame Griselle Stevens was not forgotten, or dog-haired infants occasionally born. The hypothesis of a plasmic memory, advanced by the Caledonian envoy, and worthy of the metaphysical traditions of the land he stood for, envisaged, in such cases, an arrest of embryonic development at some stage antecedent to the human. An outlandish delegate sustained against both these views, with such heat as almost carried conviction. The theory of copulation between women and the males of brutes, his authority being his own avouchment in support of fables, such as that of the Minotaur, which the genius of the elegant Latin poet has handed down to us in the pages of his Metamorphoses. The impression made by his words was immediate but short-lived. It was effaced as easily as it had been evoked by the allocution from Mr. Candidate Mulligan in that vein of pleasantry which none better than he knew how to affect, postulating as the supremest object of desire a nice, clean, old man. Contemporaneously, a heated argument having arisen between Mr. Delegate Madden and Mr. Candidate Lynch regarding the juridical and theological dilemma created in the event of one Siamese twin predeceasing the other. The difficulty by mutual consent was referred to Mr. Canvasser Bloom for instant submittal to Mr. Coadjutor Deacon Dedalus. Hitherto silent. Whether the better to show by preternatural gravity that curious dignity of the garb with which he was invested, or in obedience to an inward voice, he delivered briefly and, as some thought, perfunctorily, the ecclesiastical ordinance forbidding man to put asunder what God has joined. But Malachias's tale began to freeze them with horror. He conjured up the scene before them. The secret panel beside the chimney slid back, and in the recess appeared Haynes. Which of us did not feel his flesh creep? He had a portfolio full of Celtic literature in one hand, and in the other a file marked poison. Surprise, horror, loathing were depicted on all faces, while he eyed them with a ghostly grin. "I anticipated some such reception," he began, with an eldritch laugh, for which, it seems, history is to blame. "Yes, it is true. I am the murderer of Samuel Childs. And how I am punished! The Inferno has no terrors for me. This is the appearances on me. Tear and ages, what way would I be resting at all?" he muttered thickly. "And I tramping Dublin this while back with my share of songs, and himself after me, like of a south or a bullawurus. My hell and Ireland's is in this life. It is what I tried to obliterate my crime. Distractions, rook-shooting, the earth's language." He recited some. Laudanum. He raised the phial to his lips. Camping out. In vain his spectre stalks me. Dope is my only hope. Ah, destruction, the black panther. With a cry, he suddenly vanished, and the panel slid back. An instant later, his head appeared in the door opposite and said, "Meet me at Westlenrow Station at 11:10. He was gone. Tears gushed from the eyes of the dissipated host. The seer raised his hand to heaven, murmuring, "The vendetta of Mananorn." The sage repeated, "Lex Talionis." The sentimentalist is he who would enjoy without incurring the immense debtorship for a thing done. Malachias, overcome by emotion, ceased. the mystery was unveiled. Haynes was the third brother. His real name was Childs. The Black Panther was himself the ghost of his own father. He drank drugs to obliterate. For this relief, much thanks. The lonely house by the graveyard is uninhabited. No soul will live there. The spider pitches her web in the solitude. The nocturnal rat peers from his hole. A curse is on it. It is haunted. Murderer's ground. What is the age of the soul of man? As she hath the virtue of the chameleon to change her hue at every new approach, to be gay with the merry and mournful with the downcast, so too is her age changeable as her mood. No longer is Leopold, as he sits there, ruminating, chewing the cud of reminiscence, that staid agent of publicity and holder of a modest substance in the funds. A score of years are blown away. He is young, Leopold, there, as in a retrospective arrangement, a mirror within a mirror. Hey, presto! He beholdeth himself. That young figure of then is seen precociously manly, walking on a nipping morning from the old house in Clambrassel Street to the high school. His book satchel on him bandolier-wise, and in it a goodly hunk of wheaten loaf, a mother's thought. Or it is the same figure a year or so gone over, in his first hard hat. Ah, that was a day. Already on the road, a full-fledged traveller for the family firm, equipped with an order-book, a scented handkerchief, not for show only, his case of bright trinket-ware, alas, a thing now of the past, and a quiverful of compliant smiles for this or that half-won housewife, reckoning it out upon her fingertips, or for a budding virgin, shyly acknowledging, but the heart, tell me, his studied baisement. The scent, the smile, but more than these, the dark eyes and oleaginous address, brought home at duskfall many a commission to the head of the firm, seated with Jacob's pipe after like labours in the paternal ingle. A meal of noodles, you may be sure, is a-heating. Reading through round horn spectacles some paper from the Europe of a month before. But hey, presto! The mirror is breathed on, and the young knight-errant recedes, shrivels, dwindles to a tiny speck within the mist. Now he is himself paternal, and these about him might be his sons. Who can say? The wise father knows his own child. He thinks of a drizzling night in Hatch Street, hard by the bonded stores there, the first. Together, she is a poor waif, a child of shame, yours and mine, and of all, for a bare shilling and her luckpenny. Together, they hear the heavy tread of the watch as two rain-caped shadows pass the new Royal University. Bridie, Bridie Kelly. He will never forget the name, ever remember the night, first night. The bride, knight. They are entwined in nethermost darkness, the willer with the willed, and in an instant, fiat, light shall flood the world. Did heart leap to heart? Nay, fair reader, in a breath 'twas done, but hold back, it must not be. In terror, the poor girl flees away through the murk. She is the bride of darkness, a daughter of night. She dare not bear the sunny golden babe of day. No, Leopold, name and memory solace thee not. That youthful illusion of thy strength was taken from thee, and in vain. No son of thy loins is by thee. There is none now to be for Leopold what Leopold was for Rudolph. The voices blend and fuse in clouded silence. Silence, that is, the infinite of space, and swiftly, silently, the soul is wafted over regions of cycles of generations that have lived. A region where grey twilight ever descends, never falls on wide, sage-green pasture fields, shedding her dusk, scattering a perennial dew of stars. She follows her mother with ungainly steps, a mare leading her filly foal. Twilight phantoms are they, yet moulded in prophetic grace of structure, slim, shapely haunches, a supple, tenderness neck, the meek, apprehensive skull. They fade, sad phantoms. All is gone. Agendath is a wasteland, a home of screech owls and the sun-blind Eupupa. Netaim the Golden is no more, and on the highway of the clouds they come muttering thunder of rebellion, the ghosts of beasts. Ah! Hark! Ah! Parallax stalks behind and goads them, the lancinating lightnings of whose brow are scorpions. Elk and Yak, the bulls of Bashan and of Babylon, Mammoth and Mastodon, they come trooping to the sunken sea. Lacus Mortis. Ominous, revengeful, zodiacal host, they moan, passing upon the clouds, horned and capricorned, the trumpeted with the tusked, the lion-maned, the giant-antlered, snouter and crawler, rodent, ruminant, and pachyderm, all their moving, moaning multitude, murderers of the sun. Onward to the Dead Sea they tramp to drink, unslaked and with horrible gulpings, the salt, somnolent, inexhaustible flood. And the equine portent grows again, magnified in the deserted heavens, nay, to heaven's own magnitude, till it looms vast over the house of Virgo. And lo, wonder of metempsychosis, it is she, the everlasting bride, harbinger of the day-star, the bride, ever-virgin. It is she, Martha, thou lost one, Millicent the young, the dear, the radiant. How serene does she now arise, a queen among the Pleiades, in the penultimate Antilucan hour, shod in sandals of bright gold, coiffed with a veil of, what do you call it, gossamer. It floats, it flows about her star-born flesh, and lucid streams, emerald, sapphire, mauve, and heliotrope, sustained on currents of the cold interstellar wind, winding, coiling, simply swirling, writhing in the skies, a mysterious writing, till, after a myriad metamorphosis of symbol, it blazes, Alpha, a ruby and triangle sign upon the forehead of Taurus.
This ends Disc 23. Ulysses, Disc 24.
Francis was reminding Stephen of years before, when they had been at school together in Conmee's time. He asked about Glaucon, Alcibiades, Pisistratus. Where are they now? Neither knew. You have spoken of the past and its phantoms, Stephen said. Why think of them? If I call them into life across the waters of Lethe, will not the poor ghosts troop to my call? Who supposes it? I, Boost Ephenumenos, bullock-befriending bard, am lord and giver of their life. He encircled his gadding hair with a coronal of vine leaves, smiling at Vincent. That answer and those leaves, Vincent said to him, will adorn you more fitly when something more, and greatly more than a capful of light odes, can call your genius father. All who wish you well hope this for you. All desire to see you bring forth the work you meditate, to acclaim you Stephaneforos. I heartily wish you may not fail them. Oh, no, Vincent, Lenehan said, laying a hand on the shoulder near him, have no fear. He could not leave his mother an orphan. The young man's face grew dark. All could see how hard it was for him to be reminded of his promise and of his recent loss. He would have withdrawn from the feast had not the noise of voices allayed the smart. Madden had lost 5 drachmas on Scepter for a whim of the rider's name, Lenehan as much more. He told them of the race. The flag fell, and, off, scamper, the mare ran out freshly, with O. Madden up. She was leading the field. All hearts were beating. Even Phyllis could not contain herself. She waved her scarf and cried, huzzah, Scepter wins. But in the straight on the run home, when all were in close order, the dark horse, Throwaway, drew level, reached, outstripped her. All was lost now. Phyllis was silent. Her eyes were sad anemones. Juno, she cried, I am undone. But her lover consoled her, and brought her a bright casket of gold, in which lay some oval sugar plums, which she partook. A tear fell. One only. A whacking fine whip, said Lenehan, is W. Lane. 4 winners yesterday, and 3 today. What rider is like him? Mount him on the camel or the boisterous buffalo, the victory in a hack canter is still his. But let us bear it as was the ancient wont. Mercy on the luckless. Poor Scepter, he said with a light sigh. She is not the filly that she was. Never by this hand shall we behold such another. By gad, sir, a queen of them. Do you remember her, Vincent? I wish you could have seen my queen today, Vincent said. How young she was and radiant. Lalage was scarce fair beside her, in her yellow shoes and frock of muslin. I do not know the right name of it. The chestnuts that shaded us were in bloom. The air drooped with their persuasive odour, and with pollen floating about us. In the sunny patches one might easily have cooked on a stone a batch of those buns with the Corinth fruit in them, that Periplopomenes sells in his booth near the bridge. But she had naught for her teeth but the arm with which I held her, and in that she nibbled mischievously when I pressed too close. A week ago she lay ill, 4 days on the couch, but today she was free, blithe, mocked at peril. She is more taking then. Her posies, too, mad romp that she is, she had pulled her fill as we reclined together. And in your ear, my friend, you will not think who met us as we left the field. Come me himself. He was walking by the hedge reading. I think a brevier book, with, I doubt not, a witty letter in it from Glycera or Chloe to keep the page. The sweet creature turned all colours in her confusion, feigning to reprove a slight disorder in her dress. A slip of underwood clung there, for the very trees adore her. When Conmee had passed, she glanced at her lovely echo in that little mirror she carries. But he had been kind. In going by, he had blessed us. "The gods, too, are ever kind," Lenehan said. "If I had poor luck with Bass's mare, perhaps this draught of his may serve me more propensely." He was laying his hand upon a wine jar. Malachy saw it and withheld his act, pointing to the stranger and to the scarlet label. "Warily," Malachy whispered, "preserve a druid's silence. His soul is far away. It is as painful, perhaps, to be awakened from a vision as to be born. Any object intensely regarded may be a gate of access to the incorruptible aeon of the gods. Do you not think it, Stephen?" "Theosophus told me so," Stephen answered, "whom in a previous existence Egyptian priests initiated into the mysteries of karmic law. The lords of the moon, Theosophus told me, an orange fiery shipload from planet Alpha of the lunar chain, would not assume the etheric doubles, and these were therefore incarnated by the ruby-coloured egos from the second constellation. However, as a matter of fact, though, the preposterous surmise about him being in some description of a doldrums, or other, or mesmerized, which was entirely due to a misconception of the shallowest character, was not the case at all. The individual whose visual organs, while the above was going on, were at this juncture commencing to exhibit symptoms of animation, was as astute, if not astuter, than any man living. And anybody that conjectured the contrary would have found themselves pretty speedily in the wrong shop. During the past 4 minutes or thereabouts, he had been staring hard at a certain amount of number one Bass, bottled by Messrs. Bass and Company at Burton-on-Trent, which happened to be situated amongst a lot of others right opposite to where he was, and which was certainly calculated to attract anyone's remark on account of its scarlet appearance. He was simply, and solely, as it subsequently transpired for reasons best known to himself, which put quite an altogether different complexion on the proceedings after the moment before's observations about boyhood days and the turf, recollecting two or three private transactions of his own, which the other two were as mutually innocent of as the babe unborn. Eventually, however, both their eyes met, and as soon as it began to dawn on him that the other was endeavouring to help himself to the thing, he involuntarily determined to help him himself. And so he accordingly took hold of the neck of the medium-sized glass recipient, which contained the fluid sought after, and made a capacious hole in it by pouring a lot of it out with. Also, at the same time, however, a considerable degree of attentiveness in order not to upset any of the beer that was in it about the place. The debate, which ensued, was in its scope and progress an epitome of the course of life. Neither place nor council was lacking in dignity. The debaters were the keenest in the land, the theme they were engaged on the loftiest and most vital. The High Hall of Horn's House had never beheld an assembly so representative and so varied, nor had the old rafters of that establishment ever listened to a language so encyclopedic. A gallant scene in truth it made. Crothers was there at the foot of the table in his striking Highland garb, his face glowing from the briny airs of the Mull of Galloway. There, too, opposite to him, was Lynch, whose countenance bore already the stigmata of early depravity and premature wisdom. Next the Scotchman was the place assigned to Costello, the eccentric. while at his side was seated in stolid repose the squat form of Madden. The chair of the resident, indeed, stood vacant before the hearth, but on either flank of it the figure of Bannon in explorer's kit of tweed shorts and salted cowhide brogues contrasted sharply with the primrose elegance and town-bred manners of Malachy Roland St. John Mulligan. Lastly, at the head of the board, was the young poet, who found a refuge from his labours of pedagogy and metaphysical inquisition in the convivial atmosphere of Socratic discussion, while to right and left of him were accommodated the flippant prognosticator fresh from the hippodrome and that vigilant wanderer soiled by the dust of travel and combat and stained by the mire of an indelible dishonour, but from whose steadfast and constant heart no lure or peril or threat or degradation could ever efface the image of that voluptuous loveliness which the inspired pencil of Lafayette has limned for ages yet to come. It had better be stated here and now, at the outset, that the perverted transcendentalism to which Mr. S. Dedalus's div-skep contentions would appear to prove him pretty badly addicted runs directly counter to accepted scientific methods. Science, it cannot be too often repeated, deals with tangible phenomena. The man of science, like the man in the street, has to face hard-headed facts that cannot be blinked, and explain them as best he can. There may be, it is true, some questions which science cannot answer at present, such as the first problem submitted by Mr. L. Bloom, Pub. Canv., regarding the future determination of sex. Must we accept the view of Empedocles of Trinacria, that the right ovary, the post-menstrual period, assert others, is responsible for the birth of males, or are the too long-neglected spermatozoa or nemosperms the differentiating factors, or is it, as most embryologists incline to opine, such as Culpepper, Spallanzani, Blumenbach, Lusk, Hertwig, Leopold and Valenti, a mixture of both? This would be tantamount to a cooperation, one of nature's favourite devices, between the nisus formativus of the nemosperm on the one hand, and on the other a happily chosen position, succubitus felix, of the passive element. The other problem raised by the same inquirer is scarcely less vital, infant mortality. It is interesting because, as he pertinently remarks, we are all born in the same way, but we all die in different ways. Mr. M. Mulligan, Hyge et Huge Doc, blames the sanitary conditions in which our grey-lunged citizens contract adenoids, pulmonary complaints, etc., by inhaling the bacteria which lurk in dust. These factors, he alleged, and the revolting spectacles offered by our streets, hideous publicity posters, religious ministers of all denominations, mutilated soldiers and sailors, exposed scorbutic car drivers, the suspended carcasses of dead animals, paranoid bachelors and unfructified duennas, these, he said, were accountable for any and every falling off in the calibre of the race. Calopedia, he prophesied, would soon be generally adopted, and all the graces of life, genuinely good music, agreeable literature, light philosophy, instructive pictures, plaster-cast reproductions of the classical statues, such as Venus and Apollo, artistic coloured photographs of prize babies, all these little attentions would enable ladies who were in a particular condition to pass the intervening months in a most enjoyable manner. Mr. J. Crothers, Disc Back, attributes some of these demises to abdominal trauma in the case of women workers subject to heavy labours in the workshop and to marital discipline in the home, but by far the vast majority to neglect, private or official, culminating in the exposure of newborn infants, the practice of criminal abortion, or in the atrocious crime of infanticide. Although the former, we are thinking of neglect, is undoubtedly only too true. The case he cites of nurses forgetting to count the sponges in the peritoneal cavity is too rare to be normative. In fact, when one comes to look into it, the wonder is that so many pregnancies and deliveries go off so well as they do, all things considered, and in spite of our human shortcomings, which often balk nature in her intentions. An ingenious suggestion is that thrown out by Mr. V. Lynch, Beck, Arith, that both natality and mortality, as well as all other phenomena of evolution, tidal movements, lunar phases, blood temperatures, diseases in general, everything in fine, in nature's vast workshop, from the extinction of some remote sun to the blossoming of one of the countless flowers which beautify our public parks, is subject to a law of numeration as yet unascertained. Still, the plain, straightforward question, why a child of normally healthy parents, and seemingly a healthy child, and properly looked after, succumbs unaccountably in early childhood, though other children of the same marriage do not, must certainly, in the poet's words, give us pause. Nature, we may rest assured, has her own good and cogent reasons for whatever she does, and in all probability such deaths are due to some law of anticipation, by which organisms in which morbus germs have taken up their residence, modern science has conclusively shown that only the plasmic substance can be said to be immortal, tend to disappear at an increasingly earlier stage of development. An arrangement which, though productive of pain to some of our feelings, notably the maternal, is nevertheless, some of us think, in the long run beneficial to the race in general, in securing thereby the survival of the fittest. Mr. S. Dedalus's Div-Skep remark, or should it be called an interruption, that an omnivorous being which can masticate, deglute, digest, and apparently pass through the ordinary channel with pluto-perfect imperturbability such multifarious aliments as cancerous females emaciated by parturition. Corpulent professional gentlemen, not to speak of jaundiced politicians and chlorotic nuns, might possibly find gastric relief in an innocent collation of staggering bob. Reveals as naught else could, and in a very unsavoury light, the tendency above alluded to. For the enlightenment of those who are not so intimately acquainted with the minutiae of the municipal abattoir as this morbid-minded aesthete and embryo philosopher, who for all his overweening bumptiousness in things scientific can scarcely distinguish an acid from an alkali, prides himself on being, it should perhaps be stated that staggering Bob, in the vile parlance of our lower-class licensed victuallers, signifies the cookable and eatable flesh of a calf newly dropped from its mother. In a recent public controversy with Mr. L. Bloom, Pub. Canv., which took place in the Commons Hall of the National Maternity Hospital, 29, 30 and 31 Holler Street, of which, as is well known, Dr. A. Horn, Lice in Midwa, FKQ CPI, is the able and popular master. He is reported by eyewitnesses as having stated that once a woman has let the cat into the bag, an aesthete's allusion, presumably, to one of the most complicated and marvellous of all nature's processes, the act of sexual congress, she must let it out again, or give it life, as he phrased it, to save her own. At the risk of her own, was the telling rejoinder of his interlocutor, none the less effective for the moderate and measured tone in which it was delivered. Meanwhile, the skill and patience of the physician had brought about a happy accouchement. It had been a weary, weary while, both for patient and doctor. All that surgical skill could do was done, and the brave woman had manfully helped. She had. She had fought the good fight, and now she was very, very happy. Those who have passed on, who have gone before, are happy too as they gaze down and smile upon the touching scene. Reverently look at her as she reclines there with the motherlight in her eyes, that longing hunger for baby fingers. A pretty sight it is to see, in the first bloom of her new motherhood, breathing a silent prayer of thanksgiving to one above, the universal husband. And, as her loving eyes behold her babe, she wishes only one blessing more, to have her dear Dodie there with her, to share her joy, to lay in his arms that mite of God's clay, the fruit of their lawful embraces. He is older now, you and I may whisper it, and a trifle stooped in the shoulders, yet in the whirligig of years a grave dignity has come to the conscientious second accountant of the Ulster Bank College Green Branch. Oh, Dodie, loved one of old, faithful life-mate now, it may never be again that far-off time of the roses. With the old shake of her pretty head, she recalls those days. God, how beautiful now across the mist of years! But their children are grouped in her imagination about the bedside, hers and his. Charlie, Mary Alice, Frederick Albert, if he had lived, Mamie, Budgie, Victoria Francis, Tom, Violet Constance, Louisa, darling little Bubsy, called after our famous hero of the South African War, Lord Bobs of Waterford and Kandahar. And now this last pledge of their union. A Purefoy, if ever there was one, with the true Purefoy nose. Young hopeful will be christened Mortimer Edward after the influential third cousin of Mr. Purefoy in the Treasury Remembrances Office, Dublin Castle. And so time wags on. But Father Crunyon has dealt lightly here. No, let no sigh break from that bosom, dear gentle Minna, and Dodie, knock the ashes from your pipe, the seasoned briar you still fancy when the curfew rings for you. May it be the distant day. And doubt the light whereby you read in the sacred book, for the oil too has run low, and so with a tranquil heart to bed, to rest. He knows, and will call in his own good time. You too have fought the good fight, and played loyally your man's part. Sir, to you my hand. Well done, thou good and faithful servant. There are sins, or let us call them as the world calls them, evil memories, which are hidden away by man in the darkest places of the heart, but they abide there and wait. He may suffer their memory to grow dim. Let them be as though they had not been, and all but persuade himself that they were not, or at least were otherwise. Yet a chance word will call them forth suddenly, and they will rise up to confront him in the most various circumstances, a vision or a dream, or while timbrel and harp soothe his senses, or amid the cool silver tranquillity of the evening, or at the feast at midnight, when he is now filled with wine. Not to insult over him will the vision come, as over one that lies under her wrath. not for vengeance to cut him off from the living, but shrouded in the piteous vesture of the past, silent, remote, reproachful. The stranger still regarded on the face before him a slow recession of that false calm there, imposed, as it seemed, by habit or some studied trick, upon words so embittered as to accuse in their speaker an unhealthiness, a flair for the cruder things of life. A scene disengages itself in the observer's memory, evoked, it would seem, by a word of so natural a homeliness, as if those days were really present there, as some thought, with their immediate pleasures. A shaven space of lawn, one soft May evening. The well-remembered grove of lilacs at Roundtown, purple and white. Fragrant, slender spectators of the game, but with much real interest in the pellets as they run slowly forward over the sward, or collide and stop, one by its fellow, with a brief, alert shock. And yonder, about that grey urn, where the water moves at times in thoughtful irrigation, you saw another as fragrant sisterhood, flowy, atty, tiny, and their darker friend, with I know not what of arresting in her pose then. Our Lady of the Cherries, a comely brace of them pendant from an ear, bringing out the foreign warmth of the skin so daintily against the cool, ardent fruit. A lad of 4 or 5, in linsey woolsey, blossom time that there will be cheer in the kindly hearth when ere long the bowls are gathered and hutched. He's standing on the urn, secured by that circle of girlish fond hands. He frowns a little, just as this young man does now, with a perhaps too conscious enjoyment of the danger, but must needs glance at whiles towards where his mother watches from the piazzetta, giving upon the flower close with a faint shadow of remoteness or of reproach, alles verganglich, in her glad look. Mark this, father, and remember, the end comes suddenly. Enter that antechamber of birth where the studious are assembled and note their faces. Nothing, as it seems, there of rash or violent. Quietude of custody, rather, befitting their station in that house, the vigilant watch of shepherds and of angels about a crib in Bethlehem of Judah long ago. But as before the lightning, the serried storm clouds, heavy with preponderant excess of moisture, in swollen masses turgidly distended, compass earth and sky in one vast slumber, impending above parched field and drowsy oxen, and blighted growth of shrub and verdure, till in an instant a flash rives their centres, and, with the reverberation of the thunder, the cloudburst pours its torrent. So, and not otherwise, was the transformation, violent and instantaneous, upon the utterance of the word. "Burks!" out flings my Lord Stephen, giving the cry, and a tag and bobtail of all them after. Cockerel, jackanapes, welcher, pill-doctor, punctual Bloom at heels, with a universal grabbing at headgear, ash-plants, bilbos, Panama hats and scabbards, Zermatt alpenstocks and what-not. A deedle of lusty youth, noble every student there. Nurse Callan, taken aback in the hallway, cannot stay them, nor smiling surgeon coming downstairs with news of placentation ended, a full pound if a milligram. They hark him on. The door, it is open. Ha! They are out tumultuously, off for a minute's race, all bravely legging it. Burks of Denzil and Hollis, their ulterior goal. Dixon follows, giving them sharp language, but raps out an oath, he too, and on. Bloom stays with Nurse, a thought to send a kind word to happy mother and nursling up there. Dr. Diet and Dr. Quiet. Look, she too, not other now. Ward of watching in Horn's house has told its tale in that washed-out pallor. Then, all being gone, a glance of mother-wit helping, he whispers close in going, Madam, when comes the stork-bird for thee? The air without is impregnated with rain-dew moisture, life-essence celestial, glistening on Dublin stone, there under star-shiny chelum. God's air, the All-Father's air, scintillant, circumambient, sessile air. Breathe it deep into thee. By heaven, Theodore Purefoy, thou hast done a doughty deed and no botch. Thou art, I vow, the remarkablest progenitor barring none in this chaffering, all-including, most ferruginous chronicle. Astounding! In her lay a God-framed, God-given, preformed possibility which thou hast fructified with thy modicum of man's work. Cleave to her, serve, toil on, labour like a very band-dog, and let Scholomant and all Malthusias go hang. Thou art all their daddies, Theodore. Art drooping under thy load, bemoiled with butcher's bills at home, and ingots, not thine, in the counting-house? Head up, for every new begotten thou shalt gather thy Homer of ripe wheat. See, thy fleece is drenched. Dost envy Darby Dullman there with his Joan? A canting jay and a rheum-eyed cur-dog is all their progeny. Pshaw, I tell thee! He is a mule, a dead gasteropod, without vim or stamina, not worth a cracked kreutzer. Copulation without population, no, say I. Herod's slaughter of the innocents were the truer name. Vegetables, forsooth, and sterile cohabitation. Give her beefsteaks, red, raw, bleeding. She is a hoary pandemonium of ills. Enlarged glands, mumps, quinsy, bunions, hay fever, bed sores, ringworm, floating kidney, Derbyshire neck, warts, bilious attacks, gallstones, cold feet, varicose veins. A truce to Threens and Trentles and Jeremies and all such congenital defunctive music. 20 years of it, regret them not. With thee it was not as with many that will and would and wait and never do. Thou sawest thy America, thy life-task, and didst charge to cover like the transpontine bison. How saith Zarathustra? Dina cu trupsal melkest du, nun trinkest du di Zeusa, milch des Euters. See, it displodes for thee in abundance. Drink, man, another full, mother's milk, Purefoy, the milk of human kin. Milk, too, of those burgeoning stars overhead, rutilant in thin rain vapour. Punch milk, such as those rioters will quaff in their guzzling den. Milk of madness, the honey milk of Canaan's land. Thy cow's dug was tough, what? Aye, but her milk is hot and sweet and fattening. No dollop this, but thick, rich, bonny clabber. To her, old patriarch, pap, per deam, partulam, et per tundam nunc est bibendum. all off for a buster. Armstrong, hollering down the street. Bonafides. Where you slept last night? Timothy of the battered naggin, like old Billy O. Any brollies or gumboots in the family? Where the Henry Neville sawbones and old clo? Sorrow under me nose. Hurrah there, dicks! Forward to the ribbon counter. Where's Punch? All serene. Jay, look at the drunken minister coming out of the maternity hospital. Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus Pater et Filius. A make, mister. The Denzil Lane boys. Hell blast you, scoot. Righto, Isaacs, shove 'em out of the bleeding limelight. Yous join us, dear sir. No intrusion in life. Loo, heap good man. Ali, say me dispunch. En avant, mes enfants. Fire away, number one on the gun. Burks, Burks. Thence they advanced 5 parasangs. Salatteries mounted foot. Where's that bleeding orpher? Parson Steve, apostate's creed. No, no, Mulligan. Abaft there, shove ahead, keep a watch on the clock. Chucking out time. Molly, what's on you? Ma mère, ma mariée. British beatitudes. Retam platan digiti boom boom. Eyes have it. To be printed and bound at the Druid Drum Press by 2 designing females. Calf covers of piston green. Last word in art shades. Most beautiful book come out of Ireland my time. Silencium. Get a spurt on. Tension. Proceed to nearest canteen and there annex liquor stores. March. Tramp, 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 the boys are attitudes parching. Beer, beef, business, bibles, bulldogs, battleships, buggery and bishops. Whether on the scaffold high, beer, beef, trample the bibles. When for Ireland dear, trample the tramplers. Thunderation, keep the darned military step. We fall. Bishop's booze box, halt. Heave to. Rugger. Scrummin. No touch kicking. Wow, my tootsies. You hurt? Most amazingly sorry. Query. Who's a-standing this here do? Proud possessor of Damall. Declare misery. Bet to the ropes. Mean anti-salty? Not a red at mid this week gone. Yours? Mead of our fathers for the Ubermensch. Ditto. 5 number 1s. You, sir? Ginger cordial. Chase me the cabby's caudal. Stimulate the caloric. Winding of his ticker. Stopped. Short. Never to go again when the old... Absinthe for me, savvy? Caramba! Have an eggnog or a prairie oyster. Enemy? Avuncle has got my timepiece. 10 to. Obligated awful. Don't mention it. Got a pectoral trauma, eh, Dix? Pause fact. Got bet be a bumblebee whenever he was setting sleeping in his bit garden. Digs up near the martyr. Buckled he is. Know his donor? Yep, certain I do. Full of a doer. See her in her dishy billy? Peels off a credit. Lovey Lufkin. none of your lean kine, not much. Pull down the blind, love. To Ardalons, same here. Look slippery. If you fall, don't wait to get up. 5, 7, 9, fine. Got a prime pair of mince pies, no kid. And her take me to rests and her anchor of rum. Must be seen to be believed. Your starving eyes and albi-plastered neck, you stole my heart. Oh, Gloopot! Sir? Spud again the rumour tis. All poppycock, you'll excuse me saying, for the hoi polloi. I veered thee beest a gerd vool. Well, Doc, back from Lapland? Your corporosity sagaciating, okay? How's the squaws in papooshes? Woman body after going on the straw? Stand and deliver. Password. There's hair. Ours the white death and the ruddy birth. Hi! Spit in your own eye, boss. Mummer's wire, cribbed out of Meredith. Jesified, orchidized, polysemical Jesuit. Auntie mine's writing park inch. Baddy bad Stephen lead astray goody good Malachy. Hurroo! Collar the leather young'un, round with a nappy. Here, Jock, braw, heelant man's your barley bree. Lang may your lum reek and your kale pot boil. My tipple, merci, here's to us. How's that? Leg before wicket. Don't stain my brand new synonyms. Gives a shake of pepper, you there. Catch a holt. Caraway seed to carry away. Twig. Shrieks of silence. Every cove to his gentry mort. Venus Pandemos. Les petites femmes. Bold bad girl from the town of Mullingar. Tell her I was axing at her. Holding Sarah by the weem. On the road to Malahide. Me? If she who seduced me had left but the name. What do you want for ninepence? Machri Makrushkin, smutty mall for a mattress jig. And a pull all together. X. Whiting governor. Most deciduously. Bet your boots on. Stunned like, seeing as how no shiners is a-coming. Under constable? He've got the chink ad lib. Seed near 3 pound on un a spell ago, I said war his'n. Us come right in on your invite, see? Up to you, matey. Out with the oof. 2 bar and a wing. You larn that go off of they there Frenchy bilks. Won't wash here for nuts nohow. Lil' child velis holly. I's de cutest colour coon down our side. Gorge truth, Charlie. We're nae foo, we're nae the foo. Au revoir, mossou. Thanks you. Tis sure. What say? In the speakeasy. Tight. I see you, sir. Bantam, 2 days TT. Bowsing nout but claret wine. Garn. Have a glint, do? Gum, I'm jiggered. And been to barber, he have. Too full for words. With a railway bloke. How come you so? Opera he'd like. Rose of Castile, Rose of Caste. Police, some H2O for a gent fainted. Look at Bantam's flowers. Gemini, he's going to holler.
the Colleen Bawn, my Colleen Bawn. Oh, cheese it. Shut his blurry Dutch oven with a firm hand. Had the winner today till I tipped him a dead cert. The roughen Clyde the nab of Stephen Hand has give me the J.D. Coppoline. He strike a telegram boy, paddock, wire, big bug, bass to the depot. Shove him a Joey and Graham eyes. Mayor on form, hot order. Guinea to a goose gog. Telegram that. Gospel true. Criminal diversion? I think that, yes. Sure thing. Land him in choky-choky if the harm and beck cop the game. Madden back maddens a maddening back. O lust, our refuge and our strength. Decamping. Must you go? Off to Mammy. Stand by. Hide my blushes, someone. All in if he spots me. Come home, our bantam. Au revoir, mon vieux. Dinner forget the cowslips for hersel. Corn fade. What give ye thon colt? Palterpal. Janock. Of John Thomas her spouse. No fake, old man Leo. Shelp me, honest Injun. Shiver my timbers if I had. There's a great big holy friar. Why for you no tell me? Well, I says, if that ain't a sheeny natchez, well, I will get misha mishina. Through yerd, our Lord, amen. You move a motion? Steve boy, you're going at some. More bluggy drunkables? Will immensely splendiferous stander permit one studder of most extreme poverty and one large-size grandacious thirst to terminate one expensive inaugurated libation? Gives a breather. Landlord, landlord, have you good wine, staboo? Hoots morn a wee drop to pree. Cut and come again. Right. Boniface. Absinthe the lot. Nos omnes biberimus viridum toxicum. Diabolus capiat posterioria nostria. Closing time, gents. Eh? Rome booze for the Bloomtoff. I hear you say onions. Blue? Cadges ads. Photos paply, by all that's gorgeous. Play low, partner. Slide. Bonsoir, la compagnie. And snares of the pox fiend. Where's the buck and nambi-yambi? Skunked? Leg bail. Oh, will ye mourn in gang your gates? Checkmate. King to tower. Kind Christian, will ye help young man whose friend took bungalow key to find place where to lay crown of his head to night? Crikey, I'm about sprung. Tarnally doggone my shins if this bean't the bestest, puttiest long break yet. Item, curate, couple of cookies for this child. Cot's blood and brandy balls, none, not a pite of sheeses. Thrust syphilis down to hell, and with him those other licensed spirits. Time, gents, who wander through the world. Health all, a la votre. Golly, what in tunkets yon guy in the Macintosh? Dusty roads, peep at his wearables. By mighty, what's he got? Jubilee mutton, Bovril by James. Wants it real bad. Do you ken bare socks? Cedicus in the Richmond? Raw there? Thought he had a deposit of lead in his penis. Trumpery insanity. Bartle the Bread, we called him. That, sir, was once a prosperous cit. Man all tattered and torn, that married a maiden all forlorn. Slung her hook, she did. Here see lost love. Walking Macintosh of Lonely Canyon. Tuck and turn in. Schedule time. Nix for the hornies. Pardon? Seen him today at a runeval? Chummyorn passed in his checks. Lud a messy, poor pickaninnies. They'll no be telling me that, pulled veg. Didums blubble, big splash, cry tears, cause friend Padney was took off in black bag. Of all de duckies, Massa Pat was very best. I never see the like since I was born. Tiens, tiens. But it is well sad. Faith, yes. Get. Rev on a gradient 1 in 9. Live axle drives are souped. Lay you 2 to 1. Genazi licks him ruddy well hollow. Jappies? High angle fire. In ya. Sunk by war specials. Be worse for him, says he, nor any Rooshian. Time all. There's 11 of them. Get ye gone. Forward, woozy wobblers. Night, night. May Allah the Excellent One your soul this night ever tremendously conserve. Your attention, we're nae the foo. The Leith police dismisseth us. The least thalice. Where hawks for the chap puking, unwell in his abominable regions, yucca. Night, Mona my true love. Yuk. Mona, my own love, ook. Hark, shut your obstropolis. Flap, flap, blaze on, there she goes. Brigade, bout ship, Mount Street way. Cut up, flap, tally-ho. You not come, run, skelter, race, flap. Lynch, hey. Sign on long o' me. Denzel Lane this way. Change here for bawdy house. We too, she said, will seek the kips where Shady Mary is. Right-o, any old time. Lita buntur incubilibus suis. You coming long? Whisper, who the sutty hells the Johnny and the Black Duds? Hush! Sinned against the light, and even now that day is at hand when he shall come to judge the world by fire. Flap! Ut implerentur scripturi. Strike up a ballad. Then out spake Medical Dick to his comrade Medical Davy. Christicle, who's this excrement yellow gospeller on the Merrion Hall? Elijah is coming, washed in the blood of the Lamb. Come on, you wine-fizzling, gin-sizzling, booze-guzzling existences. Come on, you doggone, bull-necked, beetle-browed, hog-jowled, peanut-brained, weasel-eyed, four-flushers, false alarms, and excess baggage. Come on, you triple extract of infamy. Alexander J. Christ Dowie, that's my name, that's yanked to glory most half this planet from Frisco Beach to Vladivostok. The deity ain't no nickel-dime bum show. I put it to you that he's on the square and a corking fine business proposition. He's the grandest thing yet, and don't you forget it. Shout salvation in King Jesus. You'll need to rise precious early, you sinner there, if you want to diddle the Almighty God. Flap. Not half. He's got a cough mixture with a punch in it for you, my friend, in his back pocket. Just you try it on.
This ends Disc 24.